I don't know. Yeah, I can hear myself.
It started rolling tape, and I had to. And Harry mentioned ding, ding. Gunther's real name, so I had to. Go
yeah, I heard bleep the bleeping it. This morning. I was listening on the way in. I was listening to that episode. So. I've got about halfway through it on the way here.
So if anybody was wondering what that was, that
oh,
was
I knew what it was immediately.
Yeah, well, you probably know.
Yeah.
Gunther's real name, but
yeah, I do. But yeah, I heard so that can, and I was like, "Oh, okay."
Your mind, your mind can fill in the gaps. Like I bleep stuff. We do this video series. I actually made my first cameo in the Week in Review on Bob and Tom's. I put it in the group actually.
Yeah, I saw that.
But we had one where it's.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
We bleep all the time because it's funnier if you bleep a word. It's funnier than if you say the word.
Right, especially if you bleep it in a way that it's obvious what the word still is.
Right.
Like you get the first part of the consonant, and then you let the last part of it come in,
yes.
But you bleep the rest of it, that's even more hilarious.
So we bleeped... Do you know the difference between jelly and jam?
I used to, like... 2 decades ago, but I do not remember.
I can't jelly my ding in your ding.
Okay.
So that's what we bleeped. It was funny to... Whoa, we're real hot. Real hot. Go to the iPad. We... Check one, two.
Okay. And let me know when you need me.
All right, check 1, 2. Go ahead.
Check 1, 2.
Okay. We're good.
So I was going to record something for the daily stuff, but I wanted to get this Kavanaugh stuff out of my head first.
Yeah.
It's not, I can't think of anything else right now. It's so frustrating.
I know. It's just, I just.
No, it's like I didn't want to go into it because I know I was going to be doing this. So I'm like, oh, yeah.
I just want it to be over.
That's how I felt. I think Thursday I stated that I'm done with it. I don't care anymore. I'm not following it anymore. I don't care anymore because nobody. Try not to say too much until we get in.
Okay, go here. Today at 10:13. Yeah, I'm excited about the daily. I think I have enough people that we're going to be able to pull it off. That's my
yeah,
concern.
And it's actually flows into something I was wanting to do because I was wanting to do, my podcast, but then I wanted to do something called Reinhold Rants because it was like there's sometimes that something happens and I just want to go for 10 to 20 minutes on a topic and just put it out there.
Right.
And that sounds more like what we're kind of trying to do with that. So that helps.
Yeah, because we've got so many, I know you've been thinking about a podcast forever.
Yeah.
And it's like
thinking about a podcast forever is a great way to put that.
Contemplating.
I'm like, I have everything ready to go. I'm paying for the storage. I got the Fireside account. I got everything ready to go. I got an introductory episode out. Still haven't done it.
Let me go here.
My wife just laughs at me because she's like, this is you with everything you do. You have all these great ideas, and then when it comes to doing it, you'd rather... After you get done working all day, you just want to sit there and watch TV.
That's exactly right. No, I mean, for me, the end of the week, you're just like, every day, I was talking to my brother-in-law. He's in finance for a major company. And, we were talking about how it's just like, at the end of the day, our jobs are so mental. And, for me, I'm going to work from 6 a.m. to 3, coming home, maybe taking a 20-minute nap, and then podcasting or running things for the network. And so you just kind of go, I really just want to, veg out.
Yeah, I just want to binge watch Preacher or something.
Yeah, right.
I'm done with this right now.
Oops, wrong group.
And then the summer's bad because I've got to we don't have central air, so I've got a window air conditioner. Oof. So I have to turn that off to record, and it's like, oh, it's so hot. I don't want to do it. I have to do that during the streams we do on the D&D stream we do on Saturday, which is I got to do today at like a 1, but
nerd.
Yeah, no. But I have to turn the air conditioner off for 4 hours. It's like, oh.
All right, geez. Here we go. Are you live yet? Oh my gosh.
Live or is it Memorex?
I recorded something with wall management last night that is going to be hysterical.
Wall management?
Mm-hmm. Harry and I have determined who wall management will Uh-oh. Actually be.
Okay.
It's going to be very funny. Here we go.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
I understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. This is episode 320. And we pray the final episode of the Kavanaugh drama. But we got to play cleanup here on October 6, 2018, the day that he will likely be confirmed. I'm here with Reinhold. And we will continue on with the Kavanaugh talk for... Everybody, fingers crossed, the last time when we come back.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Welcome to the program. My name is Chris Spangle. We're so glad to have you here on We Are Libertarians. Very exciting time to be a part of We Are Libertarians, one of my favorite people, one of the most hated people, the villain of We Are Libertarians now that Maya is gone. it is Reinhold. Reinhold, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I mention it every time, but I don't know why. Maybe it's because you're too uppity, but the group and the Discord and social conservatives, people who lean towards Trump, I guess, you get under their skin. I guess I don't get it.
Well, what I've been told is that I'm too harsh on newer-leaning libertarians who aren't quite libertarian yet by pointing out that they're not libertarian yet, by saying your position... that you have isn't a libertarian position. Here's why.
Right.
And then who are you to tell me I'm a libertarian or not? Who made you king? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm just telling you what the position is. I'm telling you that you are not following a position. You are more in the paleo-conservative position.
Right.
And it's more of a mindset. Like, your mindset is in there. Your mindset is not in the everybody should be free to do what they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody. So until you get into that mindset, you're really not...
Right.
Thinking libertarian thoughts. And I have a tendency.
You're helping.
I have a tendency. Well, see, that's my, am I helping or am I hurting? But I have this tendency to push a little hard.
Right.
Go to the pain a little bit. And then, you know, maybe sometimes it's not the best way to go. I have tried so many different ways to reach to people like that. And it's hard because.
It's hard to suffer fools. And I have an issue with, and when you've been a libertarian for a long time, I've been a libertarian for 10 years now, you know, longer than that, but I didn't realize I was a libertarian until 10 years ago.
The most people, yeah.
You know, you, it's 20 some years.
30, yeah.
Yeah, 30. And so the newest converts, I learned this when I became a Christian at 18 and then a libertarian, you know, at 28 or whatever, 27, however old I was. The newest converts are always the most fervent. And I think I don't know what the name of the effect is, but essentially it's the people who know the least are the ones who are the most confident. It's the overconfident idiot, you know? And so when you don't know as much and you're trying to win an argument, but you know you just kind of, there's something called the macho flash where to win the argument, you just go aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And if Google macho flash by Michael Cloud, and you'll kind of see this is a libertarian writer who basically outlined, he taught communication for libertarians and wrote this concept. But, you know, you're not unique and special is what I'm saying. but I think when you've been a libertarian for a long time, A, you're just so frustrated with statists, people who are Republicans and Democrats who just are so sure of themselves, and yet they're just advocating things that are hurting us. Right. And you get frustrated at that, and you get frustrated at losing at every election, and then you get frustrated by the new people who you're so sure about things that you really don't understand yet. Like, libertarianism, I think, is... When I was a new convert, I was talking to a person in the local party, and I said, man, I'm just struggling. Like, there's just so much to learn. Mm-hmm. And he said, there's not that much to learn. If you just understand the basic underlying principles, if you just go back to first principles, and then you use that as the standard on every issue, because I was looking at it issue by issue by issue.
And I got in that conversation earlier.
Right. And so what I believe is about issues and how we do this show, it really goes back to what are the first principles? What are my basic foundational principles? How do I think I should approach people as human beings? Like I said last episode, I'm a person that sees every human life as worthy of dignity, respect, and love. Mm-hmm. You know, even the worst amongst us. And so I believe that people should be treated with respect when you're having dialogue until there comes a time when it's just time to troll because... I don't waste my time on those idiots. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to government, it's how small can we possibly make the government? And how do we, you know, so sometimes it feels like overwhelming when you become a new libertarian because you're like, I have to learn a new way to think. But if you just go back to those foundational principles of don't hurt people, don't take other people's stuff, don't steal, you know, and that applies to the group just because we vote on it, it doesn't change it. Then you start to get a clearer picture. It's like open borders versus closed borders. Okay, well, you saw closed borders over the summer, and how many people it takes to run shelters, to run, defense systems along our border. Like that's not limited government. That's not small government. That's not no government. That's authoritarianism in a way. And so, open borders are the pure libertarian position. Now, you can say, you can have that cognitive dissonance, and you can say, and there are a lot of people, and I have issues, and you have issues like this, that I know I'm unlibertarian in this instance, but I just think this way. But libertarianism is a constant, and so once you kind of get those fundamentals down, then you're good.
Right. I'm okay with somebody who says, okay, I look at everything, so the basic libertarian... people should be free to do what they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody else, right? Or not violating their rights to live their lives as they choose. That's it. That's really the extent of it. And then you get people who want to go into the economics and go into hard into these tomes that are written, anarchism and everything else. That's great, and go for that. But as long as you're looking at every issue that comes up through that lens, that filtered lens of, is this something, you know, does it fit in with my libertarian principles?
Right.
If you can make that argument, and there's a lot of times where you can kind of make an argument where you can say, okay, this is libertarian in my view because of this, and if I look at it this way a little bit differently, and I respect that a lot more than people who are just like, I'm a libertarian on 9 of 12 issues. I don't care about those other three.
Right.
Because that's how – and to me, that's more of a – there's more of a mindset on a lot of people who think they're libertarian because they want to be left alone.
Yeah.
It's like – that's great that you want to be left alone, but everybody wants to be left alone. If you're not defending other people's desire for that too, if you're just letting them hang in the wind because it doesn't affect you, then you're really not thinking of it the right way.
Yeah. So it is confusing once you get into the issues, and there are a lot of great shows out there who talk about the fundamentals of libertarian thought. Tom Woods, our friend Johnny Rocket, with Blast Off, The Lions of Liberty, mm-hmm. Roger Paxton at Lava Flow. Don't roll your eyes, Reinhold. Roger actually said something nice to me. Let me finish up what my little.
It wasn't plug backhanded.
Here. No, it was very nice. I'll have to play it here for you. He's a nice boy. So you know, there's a lot of programs that talk about that fundamental. they talk about the fundamental stuff and philosophy a lot. And what we try to do is something different than what you get from other libertarian shows, and that we try to talk about issues. We talk about current events. We talk about news, politics. Politics first and foremost, but also religion, social issues, cultural issues. I think a lot of libertarian podcasters are afraid to wade into the culture wars because it's not good for business, you know. But what I've tried to do is there are a lot of people who, you know, libertarians are divided. 50% are conservative, 50% are liberal. I just think so what I try to do is I try to find liberal leaning people, conservative leaning people, iconoclasts, and have them on this program and give you a full range of topics. But what is central to all of our co-hosts are that they're libertarians. You know, they're within the realm. Because I don't put a standard on it. I don't think you have to be an anarchist to be on this program, a minarchist, a pragmatic person or a radical person. Or I want to hear a range of libertarian voices and have a conversation about the human experience in 2018. And so one thing that we're starting to do is a daily 20-minute show. And so I did this on the Chris Spangle Show, and it almost killed me. It was funny because everybody's like, yeah, it was really good with the consistency there, and then you kind of went off the rails. I was like, you mean when I was doing 7 shows a week, and I was doing 10 hours of broadcasting, and then I went on vacation and still, instead of doing nothing, scheduled 2 shows? I was a little irritated at one of our group members, but I love him. But I was just so exhausted by the experience of doing it every day because, as I've said, you open it up. Think of your mind as a bucket. And if you're doing content, you have to pour into your mind. I think life is this way. You have to pour into your mind information. You have to read quickly. You have to read. I think there's slow and fast. Fast is the news and reading magazines. And then there's slow, which is long research and reading books. And, you know, so you try to do both. And it doesn't leave a lot of time for that slow thinking, that long-term thinking, if you're doing a daily show, because you poked holes at the bottom of your bucket and it's just pouring out. And so Harry had the idea about a year and a half ago, there's a lot of co-hosts who don't have a voice. They come on, we talk about what you want to talk about, but there's issues that they're interested in that we don't get to.
Right.
And I said, yeah, that's a great point, but we're not at a point where we can do that infrastructure-wise. And we are now. And people really seem to respond so positively to me doing that daily show. Personally, it was not possible to do it on a daily basis until I can do this full time. And I really like my job, and I have no plans on quitting my job anytime soon, my day job. And so what we're going to do is people like Reinhold, Sarah Brady Wagner, Harry, Tad Western, a bunch of people that you may not have ever heard before, people from other networks. You know, I've talked to the Lions of Liberty folks, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, the Launchpad Media is what it's called now. Sorry, I'm a creature of habit. Launchpad Media crew, you know, talking to some interesting voices that you've heard of and you haven't heard of and saying, hey, you know, you do maybe a philosophy show. You want to talk about current events? So we're now going to start launching a 20-minute daily. So there's going to be something in the feed every day. So at least 2 episodes and 3 shorts, or we're going to do, you know, 5, you know, 1 episode of, or there'll be 5 shorts and 2 episodes. So we're just trying to give you more opinion, because the thing that I hear in surveys most often is the chief complaint is there's not enough, which is truly humbling and greatly appreciated. And I really do appreciate that. Number 2 is I want to hear from more voices. Surprisingly, this audience does not want an echo chamber, and I love that about you guys. The survey that I do that you can find at the bottom of WeirdLibertarians.com if you want to leave your anonymous opinion of things, and I see it in the iTunes reviews. I want to hear more voices. I want to hear from people on the right and the left. I want to hear people argue, because if I hear you guys argue with a leftist, for instance, it helps me in argue with my leftist friends. And this program is all about arming you with facts and information for when you're talking to your friends and family. That's our goal. Our tagline now is We help you sound smarter with your friends. That's our goal. And we always ask that if you walk away with an aha moment or a piece of information that you feel that makes you feel smarter or more informed, then please share that episode and say, hey, I learned this from this show. Because the only way to really grow in this day and age in independent media is through you sharing the content. And so then the third is I want you to be more consistent. And the only way for me to be consistent to do this at the level that I want to hit, when I sit behind this microphone, I want to be 7 out of 10. I know I can't be 10 out of 10 on an episode every time, but I'm certainly not going to sit here and do a 3 out of 10 and pretend that I don't know what I'm doing. I think the last year I found my voice. I'm not relying on other co-hosts to do the research. I'm doing the research. I found my voice. And so if I don't feel that I have an episode that is going to be worth your time, I'm not going to do it. And so sometimes there's going to be one episode a week. It will mostly be two. But if I don't feel that it is worth an hour and a half or 2 hours of your time, I'm not going to post it. I'm just not going to do it. Because it is a commitment for you to listen to a podcast that is over 15 minutes, you know? And so I want to honor your time by making sure that when I sit behind this microphone, it's at least 7 out of 10. And I feel that we have done a really good job over the last year of just hitting over 700, you know? So this kind of solves some of those problems. My big fear is that people are going to go, this is too much content, and unsubscribe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that you appreciate more of the content. And if you like it, do several things. Share it. Share the content. Share the podcast feed. Ask people to listen. If you hear an episode that really hits you hard, and I ask you personally to give people a chance, if I'm not on it, listen to that show. You know, because sometimes people go, well, it's not the normal thing. Just experiment a little bit. Give them a shot. And if you really are into it, pay them a compliment. That's the currency here. And we do this, you know, we make good money on Patreon, but that goes to support the network. So I'm not in a position where I can afford to pay co-hosts, for instance. So compliments and supporting. Yeah, sorry, Dennis. Sorry, Reinhold. And so the currency is compliments and supporting their independent projects. You know, Sarah Brady Wagner, for instance, has the Speaking of Liberty podcast. Tad has Tad Talk. Brian Nichols has the Brian Nichols Show. The Boss Hog guys, the Boss Hog of Liberty. Go and support those efforts. And so pay them a compliment and send me a note and say, hey, I really like this host, or I really liked this episode. Because that, I'm all about feedback and testing and surveys and understanding what works and how to improve your experience. And I think if you go back and listen to 2013 versus now, you see why that's important. You see the progress and the growth. And third is support us on Patreon. I would humbly ask that you support us financially and then let me know, hey, I just joined Patreon because of more content. You know, so those are the things that I'm asking. Those are the things that we are doing here to continue to grow. This is an experiment. And if it doesn't work, if we look at it in a month, 3 months, and it's not working, then we'll kill it. You know, I always want to test things out and see what I can do. You know, this is the core. There will always be two episodes of We Are Libertarians. We Are Libertarians will always exist. This is the foundation of the entire platform and network. But everything else, we kind of test and try things out.
Right. And don't forget the voicemail that you can that people can send in.
Yeah, SpeakPipe. You can listen to a voicemail. You can that's a really good point, because what you get is some really cool stuff. Like, let me play this for you. It may need to load here.
Yeah, let us hear your voices too.
Yeah, we want to hear, if you have a question about politics or the libertarian philosophy or a comment about something, you can go to wearelibertarians.com and you can actually leave us a voice memo like this person did.
Woody, I'm a long time listener. Hey, I'm Woody. I'm a long time listener, but I don't do the whole feedback thing. I always hear the editor at wearelibertarians.com and, ooh, tell us on Facebook. But I'm not exactly a writer guy, so I'm trying out this voice message thing, and it works. Anyway, I started listening when you did those The Cost episodes, because Well, I'm sure I can get numbers and facts from other news sites. Those interviews that you did with people whose lives have been messed up by the government, it really gave it the spark of humanity and, you know, made it matter. And thank you for show notes. Oh my goodness. No one I talk to or argue with is going to listen to the podcast I send them to, especially the libertarian podcast. But when I've got a link to back up what I'm saying, boom, I can make a grounded argument. And when I got those links on the Jacksonville Landing shooting and the crisis in South Africa, I could copy, I could paste it. It would back me up. I actually changed minds because facts are how you do it. And it's all backed up with the information's from social media and like 10 actual real credible sources. Thanks, because I bet it's quite a pain to type up all your notes, and thanks for getting interviews, devoting your time to the podcast. But twice a week I see that notification from Google Play and it's awesome. You're awesome. You and Harry rock a lot. And thanks.
So yeah, you can leave a message like that and let us know what you like and don't like. And, you know, that's the importance of supporting us on Patreon, making the work worth it. And if you we're reaching new libertarians, we're reaching people and having an impact in a way that a lot of other shows don't, because we're using something, a concept called newsjacking. You take the news and you do content around it in an effort to pique people's interests. You know, so when our numbers on Kavanaugh are off the charts because everybody's talking about it, and people who don't pay attention often don't know what to think about things, and so they go, I'll check this out, especially from an independent media source. So, I mean, I want to play one more. This is the kind of impact that we're having, and when you donate on Patreon, this is what you're contributing towards.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you about my story of how I came across We Are Libertarians. I had a friend of mine post on Facebook, and she said it was one of her favorite episodes from one of her favorite podcasts. Now, I don't really listen to podcasts very often, unless they're about something I'm really interested in, but I thought that if she said it was that good, it might be worth a listen. At first, I kind of saw the length, saw it was over 2 hours long, and I thought there's no way I could pay attention or listen this entire time. But after 5 minutes of discussion, I was so into the story that I couldn't stop listening. It was one about South Africa and what's going on over there. At work, I had a discussion with my coworkers about South Africa, and it really was just an echo chamber of the same opinion over and over. The day after I heard the podcast, we were talking about it again, and the stuff that I learned made me seem like an expert. I think everyone kind of tries to be that guy at the office that's smarter than everyone else, but nobody likes to be that guy, you know what I mean? Instead, I found that I became the guy at the office that found a ton of common ground with my Republican and Democrat friends, and now they come to me like I know everything all of a sudden. My only complaint is that I want to hear your input on even more issues. But that's pretty much it. Just keep doing what you're doing.
So that is what we're up to. That is the power of sharing the content online with your friends. And all of that is run by Patreon, which you can donate at wearelibertarians.com/support. You can find a bunch of options on how to support the program, like a yearly contribution, a weekly contribution, a monthly contribution through Patreon or PayPal. And it all just really goes to help out a lot. So I appreciate everybody who is going to participate in the daily program and everybody who's going to listen and share it. So without further ado, that is enough of the update. If you want to hear the Roger complimenting me thing, I won't play it, but
it's in the feed too.
It's in the Patreon feed, and it's also in SoundCloud. There's also a new network feed. So somebody asked for this. I call it the Christy Avery Memorial feed. She's not dead, but we want to honor her memory. because it's every show from the We Are Libertarians Network. You can grab that at wearelibertarians.com. If you just want an easy way to listen to all the shows, download them and listen at work like Christy Avery does. she's like. She's on the chat. You know, if you're $10 a month, you get access to the live chat as we're doing this. She's like, Saturday morning, I'm so confused. Well, as I said, you know, the doing two shows Tuesday and Thursday nights, it didn't allow enough prep time between, and it was just too much. So now we're going to start scheduling these on Saturdays when I can get more co-hosts. And so you'll have a Wednesday show in the feed and a Saturday show in your feed.
Right,
and then along with the daily, and
it helps because doing it on a Saturday can be more relaxed because we're not like
exactly
all working all day. Then we get over here and we try to do this, and then right. We want to go to bed soon. So
yeah, and
take
it's,
your time.
Like we finished at 10:30 on Tuesday night, and ooh, you know, yeah, so
that was a,
long one.
So I'm asking a lot of people to come to my house and do this, and so to make it easier on people to get more co-host over, I'm switching it to Saturday. Plus, my voice sounds better because I've not been talking all day, and so I'm gonna have to do that. So without further ado, I apologize for my chattiness. I know it felt like a 10-minute commercial, but I really just want to reiterate the impact that this audience is having on people, the impact that this program and our co-hosts are having on people, and how much we appreciate your contributions at Patreon and when you share it. And hey, we'll retweet you or reshare it on Facebook, so make sure you tag myself or We Are Libertarians. All right, this is going to be the last of the Kavanaugh episodes. I'm praying so, because today we had CNN streaming in the background, but I turned it off for bandwidth, and I believe that he will be confirmed today.
Most likely.
Murkowski is not. Murkowski, the Republican, who is a Republican until a Democrat. She won in 2016. She's there for another 4 years. If the Democrats take the Senate, there's no doubt in my mind that she's going to go independent and then caucus with Democrats to try and win her seat, because she won in Alaska as a write-in candidate. Mm-hmm. Her father, Frank Murkowski, was the senator from Alaska forever, and so she's a heritage person. She's not voting for Kavanaugh, but Joe Manchin of West Virginia, a Democrat, is voting for Kavanaugh, and so now it's going to be 51-49. Flake is voting for Kavanaugh. He was just making Trump sweat. He's the one who asked for the week-long, and Susan Collins is voting for Kavanaugh. Now, so
I don't know how much he was making Trump sweat or how much he was covering his own. Because he got attacked. He got jumped in the hall trying to get into the elevator. And
he
started
feeling
bad about it.
He said on 60 Minutes that he was directly asked, like, if you were running for re-election, would you have done the week-long delay for the FBI investigation? He said, absolutely not. There's no way.
Right.
You know, so I think this is going to have a big impact in November. I think for every leftist that is screaming today at a senator,
whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Exactly. 1,000 more independents changed their vote to Republicans because they don't want these lunatics in charge. You know, it's like Amy Schumer getting arrested outside along with Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah,
I think that the girl who's famous for showing her boobs on that one music video, the Blurred Lines video, that's literally why she's famous. I don't know why Amy Schumer's famous.
On the Blurred Lines video, she's okay. Because
I mean, you should probably look it up for science.
That's like soft rape there on that whole video anyway.
So I can't find this Candace Owens tweet, but she was basically like, you're the definition of white privilege. Like, you two are getting arrested. You're barely getting arrested.
They're demanding to be arrested.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of layers here that we want to kind of clean up. There's the political impact. There's why Kavanaugh shouldn't be on the Supreme Court to begin with. There's the credibility of Kavanaugh and Ford. So where do you want to begin?
My first thought, what I really wanted to address.
I'm overruling you.
Okay.
I want to start with why Kavanaugh shouldn't be on the Supreme Court. Yes. And
I have a lot of reasons why, but do you want to get into the actual constitutional reasons why?
I want to start with the constitutional reasons. And I'm gonna outsource this to Ben Swan, because Ben put together a video that you'll find in the show notes. I've got a ton of articles, as usual, in the show notes for this episode that you can find at WeAreLibertarians.com. And he put together the three constitutional reasons why Kavanaugh should not be on the Supreme Court. And I thought it was a really, really good explanation. Ben Swan, if you don't know, he runs an outfit called he does these videos called Reality Check. He's funded by Dash, which is a cryptocurrency, and is a libertarian journalist who became prominent in Cincinnati when he started doing these libertarian-leaning reality checks on his local TV news. Started a site called Truth and Media, had to get a real job for a while because he didn't get enough support in Atlanta as a TV reporter, and then Dash basically resurrected his career as a libertarian newsman. So he's very popular. So this is three reasons why he should not be in the Supreme Court.
The circus that has surrounded the Brett Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court has been drowned out by 36-year-old uncorroborated accusations of sexual assault. Now, do you support Kavanaugh's nomination? If so, you likely do, because you know almost nothing about his record, but you feel for him personally. Do you oppose Kavanaugh? If you do, it's likely for the very same reason. But today, we're going to tell you why, for constitutional reasons, Brett Kavanaugh should likely not be a Supreme Court justice. Is Brett Kavanaugh actually an enemy of the Fourth Amendment? Let's give it a reality check.
Reality Check with Ben Swan, powered by Smart Cash.
Well, all of the noise around the Brett Kavanaugh nomination to the Supreme Court has really accomplished only one thing. It has prevented any real concerns over Kavanaugh's history and view of the Constitution. Today, three reasons why Kavanaugh should likely not be on the U.S. Supreme Court. Number one, the Patriot Act. You may or may not know that during the time of the September 11th terror attacks, Brett Kavanaugh was an associate White House counsel for then-President George W. Bush. Now, he was instrumental in helping to draft and create one of the most unconstitutional laws ever passed in this country. We're talking about the Patriot Act. According to the Electronic Privacy Information Center, the Supreme Court justice nominee, in emails at that time, referred to the Patriot Act as, quote, measured, careful, responsible, and a constitutional approach. He has been definitively credited with the line, quote, the new law will update laws authorizing government surveillance, which demonstrates one very important thing, that the Fourth and Fifth Amendment protections of due process and protections against warrantless searches and government surveillance is something that Kavanaugh believes could be updated in the Constitution. As the Foundation for Economic Freedom points out, quote, anyone who knows anything about the Patriot Act knows that constitutional and careful are by no means accurate descriptions. The Patriot Act obliterated the Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights to privacy and due process by giving the federal government sweeping new powers to conduct surveillance on the American people, end quote. Number two, his role in the U.S. torture memos and enemy combatants issue. Now, while in the Bush White House, Kavanaugh was involved in two very important discussions, the first of which surrounded the use of torture by the administration. In 2004, a series of memos, which were originally composed while Kavanaugh served the Bush administration, well, those were released. And in short, these memos told a story of members of the Bush administration attempting to broadly expand the legal definition of torture to justify waterboarding and sleep deprivation as being permissible. Those memos also detailed the Bush administration's attempt to seek the authority to label anyone of their choosing, anyone, as an enemy combatant, thus subjecting them to the possibility of indefinite detention in facilities like Guantanamo Bay. While undergoing his nomination to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in 2006, Kavanaugh testified that he knew nothing about these memos or the attempt to frame a legal argument for indefinite detention, saying this, quote, I think with respect to the legal justifications or the policies relating to the treatment of detainees, I was not aware of any issues on that or the legal memos that subsequently came out. This was not part of my docket, either in the counsel's office or as staff secretary, end quote. But in 2007, the Washington Post reported that in 2002, there was in fact a contentious meeting in the White House over whether the Supreme Court would allow the enemy combatant to be used for any American the government deemed an enemy, and that now Judge Kavanaugh was not only present at this meeting, but was specifically summoned to weigh in on the matter since he himself was a former clerk for the swing vote judge, Justice Anthony Kennedy. At the meeting, he reportedly voiced his concerns that Justice Kennedy and other swing voters on the Supreme Court would never side with the administration's controversial decision to label any person, any American citizen, an enemy combatant. Number three, Kavanaugh apparently doesn't believe in privacy. Now, no doubt you remember when Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor, revealed this massive spying program that had been underway by the federal government for years, spying on and gathering information on virtually every American citizen. Well, during that time, Judge Kavanaugh, he was and he still is on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. It's the second most powerful court in the nation. But it was in this position that Kavanaugh sided with government mass surveillance, stating that, quote, the government's metadata collection program is entirely consistent with the Fourth Amendment. He also later stated that, quote, critical national security need outweighs the impact on privacy occasioned by this program, end quote. See, Judge Kavanaugh, simply put, believes that you do not have an inherent right to privacy. something that a true constitutionalist would believe in, because privacy and the right to be free from constant surveillance is the very foundation of our Constitution. Judge Andrew Napolitano gave a lecture recently explaining how Kavanaugh holds the Fourth Amendment in such low regard. Take a look.
It's essential American right in the Fourth, the right to be left alone, which of course today we call privacy. The Fourth is the most unique one because it says the people, doesn't say the citizens, it says the people shall not be interfered with in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Persons, houses, papers, and effects. Except by a warrant signed by a judge based on probable cause. Probable cause means probable cause of crime. It doesn't mean probable cause that you're talking to a book agent in Florence. A real case in which the NSA was listening to a conversation in Italian. They thought they were hearing a terrorist. They were just hearing a guy in New York trying to buy a book from the book agent in Florence. When the case came to court, the judge said, well, there's no prosecution here. They didn't come after you for anything you said. Therefore, there's no violation of the Fourth Amendment. Who wrote that opinion? Let's see if you've heard of this guy.
He's writing Kavanaugh.
About which more later.
So what you need to know is that Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination has, again, turned into a circus. Brett Kavanaugh, make no mistake, is not a constitutionalist. The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution is one of the most critically important in order to maintain a free republic. Brett Kavanaugh, throughout his career, has actually worked to destroy the freedoms that the Fourth Amendment protects. And that is the reason Kavanaugh should be resisted. But part of the reason that these issues are not at the forefront of this argument, because the politicians who oppose him and those who support him, virtually all of them, also hold the Fourth Amendment in contempt. They also, all of them, don't believe that you have a right to privacy or freedom from unlawful search or freedom from government spying. See, Brett Kavanaugh's appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court, if it happens, it's not a disregard of women, as the media will tell you. It's a disregard of freedom. That's Reality Check. Let's talk about that right now on social media.
All right. So first and foremost, sorry to the video stream. I just realized that we didn't have the board going out to the stream. So
they were just watching us.
They were just watching us watch something. But I figured it out about 5 minutes into that, and I've messed something else up. So if you heard the sound being a little odd, but I thought that was a really good summation. That was a better summation than I was going to be able to do. And the freedom for the fee, basically, I put the article in there as well, wrote a great article on a lot of that, on why. So there's more details in that as well. All that in the show notes at WeAreLibertarians.com. But that, I think, is big. Those are big reasons why Brett Kavanaugh is someone that libertarians can't support, because as Sarah Brady Wagner said in Wall Daily One, his inclination is to support big government first and foremost. He's a creature of the swamp. He has been there with Bush when executive powers were expanded, and he was the legal mind that was relied on in a lot of ways to grow government over the last 20 years.
And the other thing, too, is, I mean, so a lot of these justices are getting in a case of looking at all this. Is the government able to do this? Can we make what the government wants to do fit in what the Constitution says, instead of this is clearly not what was intended when this was written, right? So that's the originalist viewpoint of the Constitution. And the person who, you know, makes the best argument for the originalism of the Constitution is Madison, who wrote that himself.
Right.
Right. So I think the person who wrote the Constitution would probably be the person you should go to and say, hey, what was going on when you wrote this? What were you thinking? What was the point of it? And we don't have justices being nominated now that do that anymore.
Right.
Plus the fact that in that video, one of the points he mentions is Judge Kavanaugh lied to Congress in his confirmation hearings by saying he did not know about these memos that he was actually a part of.
Right.
So one of the things I'm really frustrated about is
why is lying to Congress not a big deal anymore?
All right, so I knew you'd bring this up, so I wanted to look up the actual definition of perjury. Okay, so let me explain what the definition of perjury is, because perjury is what matters.
Right.
This is the actual code. Let me read it. Then, all right, U.S. Code 18-1621, perjury generally. And this is in the show notes. Whoever, having taken an oath before a competent tribunal, officer, or person, in any case in which a law of the United States authorizes an oath to be administered, that he will testify, declare, depose, or certify truly, or that any written testimony, declaration, or deposition, or certificate by him subscribed is true, willfully and contrary to such oath states, or subscribes that any material matter which he does not believe to be true, or in any declaration, certificate, verification, or statement under the penalty of perjury as permitted under Section 1746 of Title 28, U.S. Code, willfully subscribes as true as any material matter which he does not believe to be true. And it goes on. But the definition of perjury, lying to Congress is... lying is bad. We all agree that lying is bad. It is, but perjury is the political football that people always pick up. And so if I were to go in front of Congress, and let's say I were being prosecuted in front of Congress for bank fraud, all right? If I go in front of Congress and I say, the day that I stole the money... or the day that is in question was a sunny day, but it was actually rainy. And I willfully say that it was rainy when it was sunny. That's not perjury. You're lying to Congress, but it's not perjury because it's not material to what is being investigated. Now, if I were to say that I did not ever steal this money, and then, you know, you catch me, then you could try me for perjury. You try me for bank fraud, but you can tack on perjury later. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that Brett Kavanaugh, when people bring up perjury, and he perjured himself in this, and there's equal amounts of little things in Ford's testimony, like the door, we'll get into the door later, where she says, you know, she says, I'm claustrophobic. The way that this came out in 2012 was that we were renovating our home and I wanted an extra door for safety, and my husband didn't understand why, people didn't understand why, and then in therapy that's when I came out with the Kavanaugh act, you know, the
origination.
See, the reason I let Swan do that is because he can say surveillance, right? But you know, so it is material to her testimony when she's saying, you know, why this came out. And then, but then records show, according to Real Clear Investigations, that this was tacked on for an in-home counselor years before they lived there. And so was she misremembering, or was she lying? And so that's the question: it is material to the investigation, but you'd have to prove intent that she was lying about this door in her testimony. But given that she's kind of I'm sorry to say this, but she's kind of a bubblehead. She's sort of like flighty, it seems like, with the little voice. And
everybody goes on the voice. It's like the voice doesn't...
The voice is specifically... I think the voice is somewhat of a put-on.
You don't think it's real? It's her real voice?
Okay. I think there's two ways to look at this. There is the pro Blasey Ford version, mm-hmm. which is that victims of trauma... sometimes when they are abused, their voice gets stuck at that age. And so some women, if you ever run into anyone who's a woman who kind of talks like this, she sounds like a 5-year-old, then sometimes if you pry into that person's history enough, you'd find out that there was a traumatic situation that happened at 5. And this is very common in trauma victims of all genders, all races, creeds, colors. It's the human mind. Is that certain things about your personality get suspended at a point when trauma happens. There are certain parts of my personality that are just stuck at 15, right. You know? So I think when you hear a woman who is testifying before Congress that kind of sounds 15, mm-hmm. and is saying something traumatic happened at 15, that's a data point that you could put in her corner.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also something to be said for the way that she conducts. I posted in the group this body language video that kind of points out like the cutesy poses and the mm-hmm. voice, and these are kind of like
these are tricks and tools to use to seem vulnerable, so you'll believe me.
Well, and the other thing too is that she's a psychologist, so she knows all of this trauma points and knows what it's going to be to back up her story from a trauma point of view.
And that's the cynical view, is that she's doing it as a way to get you to believe her because she knows how to rig the system because of her extensive training. And Michael Savage has even gone far as to connect her to the CIA.
That's one of the things. Yeah,
but you can look that one up for yourself.
He's wrong, by the way.
Like, what, her husband or dad or somebody?
They said her dad,
CIA.
and it turns out he's talking about the wrong person. Okay. He looked up on Wikipedia. The person he was talking to didn't have children or whatever. It's not her grandfather, it's her father. And then her brother was part of the CPS, or not CPS, but the Fusion.
Right.
And he was a decade and a half before he left. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, I put in there a factcheck.org article that kind of outlines this and some other conspiracy theories floating around about Ford that you can look up. I'm not going to take your time on this program about it, but there are some things that are just not true. But back to the Ford point, I think you can kind of say, like, all right, her voice could be a data point, or it could be her putting it on because she's an expert in this field. Now, when it comes to Kavanaugh, you have to look at it and you have to go, okay, if he is knowingly saying, for instance, that he never blacked out drunk, he fell asleep one time because he got too drunk. Mm-hmm. It is hard to believe that someone who ran with Mark Judge based on his autobiography and ran in these social circles when people kind of say this was the environment in the 80s and just our own knowledge of how you're of the same
age.
You're
older than I am.
Yeah, and so you have, but you know, when I was growing up, everybody was binge drinking except for me, you know, and you kind of go, okay, that stretches credibility. So then the argument becomes, did he perjure himself? Well, is it material to what is being investigated?
I believe so.
And so you can make the case that it is material to the original claim that the amount that you drank, your behavior is something to be questioned in that time frame if we're to get at the truth of what happened when you were 17.
Right.
So,
he's accused of, during that moment, he was drunk.
Right.
So he's saying he didn't get to that point where he was drunk where it would impair his judgment. So this, I think, becomes a material issue. I mean, he's the one who brings us up by stating these facts. He introduces them as being relevant.
Right.
At that point. So... What I think happened though is that the Democrats, because they're not lawyers, well, they are lawyers, but they're bad ones apparently, didn't push him on the issues in the right way to get him to definitively say yes or no. He was so evasive. He was, during his testimony, it was just astounding to watch.
Yeah.
That they were letting him get away with that. To say, okay, you know, especially when they started going into the terms. That was just the most obvious section, right? Where, you know, what is the devil's triangle? Oh, it's a drinking game. Oh, come on. No.
Yeah.
I grew up then. It's not.
So I put a couple articles in the show notes that kind of go into that, both into the temperament issue. And Jacob Solem, who is a writer at Reason that I really respect, wrote an article saying Brett Kavanaugh's emotions don't disqualify him, but his inflammatory and evasive strategy may be another matter. But... You know, the claim has evolved with Kavanaugh on the left, and Ben Shapiro has pointed this out, that we've gone from, you know, he's Trump's pick, so he's not qualified, and then it's gone to he's a rapist, and then it's gone to he's too emotional, and then it's gone to, you know, he's too evasive, and then it's gone to he perjured himself. It's like there's and this always happens with the left more than the right, it seems, that there's always an evolution of the charges.
Right.
And there's a
called
drift.
Moving the goalposts,
yeah,
some people say.
Exactly.
But there's also something to be said that you're trying to determine somebody's ethical qualifications, right? So what are their ethics? And you're putting them on a position of the Supreme Court. It's supposed to be the highest in the land. Shouldn't you watch through that process to see how the person reacts underneath all of that, determine what kind of person they're going to be on the court? I mean, this is, I know people hate to say this, but this is more of a job interview than it is a criminal case.
Okay. No, it maybe, but at what job interview are you accused of gang rape right at the beginning. I mean,
yeah,
it's you can say it's a job interview all you want, but that's a convenient excuse to try and say, well, it's a job interview and his temperament matters. Mm-hmm. It's like I would be as angry and as pissed off if I felt that I did not gang rape women mm-hmm. and that Michael Avenatti was publishing BS, and then mm-hmm. this woman takes a week to figure the second and third accuser are so insanely. They're just totally incredible. Right. I'm not sure which the word is, but then you have the media continue to repeat that he's been accused by three women, even after mm-hmm. the second two have been disproved. You know, you've seen the erosion of Blasey Ford's testimony. You have the article coming out late by the Wall Street Journal talking about the leaning on of Blasey Ford's witnesses because. Blasey Ford's witnesses all say, I don't know who Kavanaugh is. And then there's phone calls. I mean, we can go into those details in a moment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kavanaugh is and then you've got the death threats against your family, your daughter. Everyone's being harassed.
Mm-hmm. Like on both sides.
Of course. Absolutely. But
it's horrible.
I'm sorry. This is a traumatic event mm-hmm. for Brett Kavanaugh right. and his family. This is and no mm-hmm. matter – even if he were – guilty of what he is being accused of, it still doesn't change the fact that this is a traumatic moment. Mm-hmm. And you don't always act correctly in a traumatic moment. There's probably a little theater that he had to look aggressive. You know, I mean,
I have a theory that was more intended for Trump than it was anybody else.
Sure. And, you know, and Trump's behavior has been mm-hmm. weird, but we'll touch on that. But so the whole argument that he doesn't have judicial temperament, I'm sorry, it doesn't have the same context as 10 years from now when he's sitting on the court bench right. in his office.
And I'm not opposed to him being upset and angry and having a temperament. That's not my argument at all. My argument is he's willing to lie to people in order to get this position to Congress. And I don't think that's a thing you want the judge to do. Now, you may say it's not technically perjury, but he's not answering truthfully. There's no way you can say he is.
But is presenting the best face of the evidence lying? When he is presenting himself as a choir boy, he's presenting probably you and I can sit here and we can talk about our personal history and I can tell you the real version or mm-hmm. I can tell you the best version and both are true. But so, you know, you're claiming he's lying by omission.
No, I'm going to say he's lying by saying things that aren't true.
Okay, like what?
Like when you ask him, what do these terms mean? And he's telling you they mean something that they would never mean in that time frame.
But how can you prove that?
Go to his contemporaries and say, okay, in this book, this was written. Why was this written?
But how do you prove that boffing meant to him it could have been farting and to others it could have been butt effing? Like there's... I'm sorry, there is...
And so you may say, okay, technically perjury, he's not maybe guilty of because of that. But we're supposed to be looking at this as, do we think, not us, but the senators,
sure.
are supposed to be determining off all the information whether they think this is the person who they want to be on the Supreme Court.
Right.
And if they think that, you know, he's obviously making that up, then they have to take that into account, right? I mean, that's part of the information that's being processed. So if you're going to hire somebody in a job interview and you find out that there's a rumor that he done something horrible, but there's no proof of it, does that not play into your mind when you decide you've got five people to hire or five people up for the job and you want to hire somebody? That doesn't weigh in your mind on that? And should it or shouldn't it? And even if it does or doesn't, should, you know, there should be no...
I think it's relevant information, yeah. and I've always said that. I've said that from the beginning, but at a certain point, you have to go, okay, who is this man now? What mm-hmm. has he accomplished? Oh, sure. How does he treat women now?
Right. But that's my point, is that how he's acting right now in front of Congress is more informative to me, as if I were a senator, than the charges from 35 years ago.
Sure. Well, it was his temperament was significant enough that he wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed mm-hmm. saying, I regret how I acted.
Yeah.
But I just don't find it to be a persuasive argument that he doesn't have judicial temperament because he's being falsely accused of all these different mm-hmm. things and being harassed.
Sure.
And he got pissed off in the moment.
No, I don't. Sorry. I don't think it's an issue with judicial temperament. I think it's an issue with ethics.
Okay.
You know, an ethical issue. I think that he is what we've talked about before. He's a swamp rat.
Sure.
He's a political creature. And I don't think that political creature is going to rule in the right way on the Supreme Court. He's going to, you know, if something comes to him that's going to be, well, the Republicans really want this, he's going to try and find a way to make that work.
No, I think we started with the most persuasive right. evidence. That's what I wanted to start with the episode with, was the most persuasive argument against Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
I don't find him fudging on boafing or whatever to be a convincing argument that he shouldn't be on the Supreme Court, because it is – you have to take into consideration – like, we often in these situations want to break somebody into 100 pieces and take the worst thing that they did, and then the literalism takes over of the internet and goes, this is why he shouldn't be this thing. And then we ignore the other 99 pieces of his positive characteristics. Mm-hmm. You know, and so – as a Supreme Court justice, is he going to go on and like write opinions about his 36-year-old high school yearbook? No, he is somebody who has displayed a long career of being a competent lawyer and judge. And we may not agree with the way that he has ruled, and that is fair, I think, to judge him on. But I think to say he shouldn't be on the Supreme Court because he didn't have the correct definition of boffing is just, to me, not a convincing argument.
It's more of a... taking all of the information together. That's just a piece of that information. I mean, the other part is during his previous confirmation hearings when he says he had no knowledge of these memos that he was involved with.
Sure. That's a much more credible. Yeah, that's much more like credible.
You start taking all these pieces together and you're starting to come up with a picture of a person who I don't think is one of the top nine judges in the world, in this country who should be on that court.
Well, I never felt that way about Kavanaugh.
Yeah. I mean that just informs that, in my opinion. And that's the other thing, too, is that all of this is more a case of trying to find a way to get the Trump supporters who would not like a neocon Bushy, you know, judge in there. They'd rather have somebody who's more on their the old right type of things.
Right.
And populism be in there. So does this elevate him to their, you know, the rights constituents.
Right.
You know, now we have a defense against men. We got to make sure that he's take, you know, it just seems like he's, that this whole thing's played out in order to more clearly define the sides of the issue of this so they can squeak him through.
I would agree with that. I think the entire process has been that way. Yeah. It's each side trying to do what they want.
The pox on both houses in this. Yeah, this has been horrible. And the worst thing is both him and Dr. Blasey Ford are I think more of the victims than us. She did not want to come out with this. She wanted this to be kept confidential. She didn't want to have to go to court. You know, everybody's like, well, she's doing this to make money and to be famous, but that's not consistent with what happened.
Yeah, no, I think that I think they're both victims of this process, and I think Kavanaugh, you're right in that Republicans are trying to squeak a win through, and they know that if they were to lose, they take the risk, they don't get him confirmed, then they take a bath in the midterms. Then you have an open seat for the rest of the time.
Right. Well, I think not having that seat filled and being able to point to the Democrats doing it would have gotten them more votes in the midterms.
It's like,
which I'm surprised why they. I was kind of surprised that this all went down the way it did and as fast as it did. Because I thought it was going to get drawn out a lot longer to push up more close to November.
Well, liberals can thank Harry Reid for removing the nuclear option. It used to take 60 votes to clear one of the Senate candidates.
It wasn't
for cloture. I mean, excuse
me. But not for Supreme Court justices. That changed last year.
That's what I'm saying.
That was Republicans.
No, it was Harry Reid who removed.
Harry did it in 2013.
Okay,
didn't he? So in 2013 it was removed for all judicial nominations except Supreme Court.
Okay.
And then in April 2017, the current Senate.
With Gorsuch.
Yeah, the current Senate said, no, we're changing the rule to include Supreme Court justices so we can get a win with 51 instead of 60, which I think is horrendous because I think people going to the Supreme Court should have a much higher threshold of bipartisan agreement.
Yeah, but the reality is that once you change a precedent, you allow the other side to do it too.
Oh yeah, I think they were both wrong.
You look at somebody like Ruth Bader Ginsburg was mm-hmm. confirmed with I think 93 votes.
Yeah,
you know, and there wasn't 93 Democrats in the Senate at that time. The precedent has always been the president picks. And Susan Collins, I put the video in the show notes, but mm-hmm. you should take the 45 minutes to watch her arguments. You know, it is hilarious to watch all these liberals bashing a liberal Republican making a speech about a justice who will be favorable to liberal things like Obamacare and Roe v. Wade, and he's not going to overrule Trump. And then watching Republicans like Rhino Rob Kendall making Susan Collins their profile picture because she saved Kavanaugh. Like, you know, did you listen to the speech? Because she's basically saying, like, he's everything you hate, Republicans.
Right.
But in it, she essentially says, you know, what is my job? She gives a 45-minute civics lesson that I thought was really interesting. And she's like, my job is to make sure that he is qualified to do the job, and I feel he is qualified to do the job. I don't feel that her, you know, based on everything that I've seen, that it's possible that it happened, but it doesn't rise to the level of I forget what the standard that she said she used, but it was basically like, there's just not enough that I can convict the guy of this crime in my mind, and so mm-hmm. I've got to vote for him. Because I feel it is the president's mm-hmm. choice, and I'm just here to advise and consent, right. not to make the determination finally. And so now when it comes time, you're not going to get Lindsey Graham to vote for, you know, Collins makes the point. I voted for Sotomayor. I voted for Kagan. I voted for two of Bushes. I voted for Gorsuch because mm-hmm. my job is to affirm people who are qualified to be on the Supreme Court. And so Lindsey Graham's like, I voted for Obama's nominees. I don't think that you'll get a single Republican. Democrats are changing that precedent where they're not voting for the other side's nominees because it's Trump. Senators are coming out and saying, I'm not voting for this nominee before it's even named. Activist groups are putting out statements with XX in place of the name because they didn't even have the nominee yet, and they hit send accidentally.
They had the protest signs with the line ready there to write the name in.
Exactly right. You know, so the whole process has become changed permanently, and you're never going to get that precedent back. You know, and that's part of the... Well, the issue here is that it literally now every Senate race for the rest of our time on Earth becomes about the Supreme Court, and it's because the Warren Court specifically changed the Supreme Court into an activist court, and liberals live or die because ultimately the majority of Americans, I believe, are personally conservative. They may not be politically conservative, but they are personally conservative. And so they will vote for moderates. They will. I think if we didn't have gerrymandering, we'd have a very moderate Congress. We'd have a very moderate president. You know, somebody who leans a little left of right of center. You know, people want to be left alone ultimately, and it is.
Well, I think studies show that if you take, you know, the issues and where certain parties fall on those issues. 60% of the people in the country are libertarians.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they're not. I mean, they're not identifying as that for whatever reason. So, yeah. And it's the tribalism and the factionalization and the, you have to vote for us because the other side is so horrible.
Right.
And that becomes so prevalent in the mindset. Like, I have a neighbor. I don't have a lot of neighbors where I live, but I have one especially dear to me, the couple is just they're wonderful people. They've always helped us out when we needed to. I mean, they are the most loving people in the world. And then she, my neighbor posted on her Facebook and forwarded the accusation that Kavanaugh's house was, vandalized.
Right.
Right. Which was a completely fake story. Right. And there was no basis in truth. It came from a website called abcnews.live,
right,
which is not ABC News.
That's obviously. How they get you. It's you have to check your URLs, right. Like nbc.news.ru.com. Like it's not a real site.
So she posts this and is like, this is disgusting, and I can't believe the Democrats, and we need to step up and do this. And it's like, that's not her normal mindset, but she was so pushed on this because of the intense tribalization of the issue that it made her you know, people are becoming sick, physically sick.
Yes.
From all of the stress and the fighting and the arguments and the dehumanization of each side. It's the most frustrating thing I've ever seen.
It's why I can't do a daily show. It's going to kill. It's like, it's going to kill me, you know, and maybe I can do it at a point if I have a staff of people.
Yeah.
But I cannot do 10 hours a week without just making myself sick, like without physically just, I think the reality of living in the internet age and politics, you know, people like Ben Shapiro or even Jason Stapleton can do it because they have some level of people helping with show prep. And it just, if your responsibility is to sit in and wade into it all the time and it's 360 days a year, it's just like,
how did Rush do it for so long?
I don't know, man. I look at it and I go, you know, I like listening to Glenn Beck because he has the best prep staff. Like, I think his prep staff is very libertarian. and so they have a lot of interesting information a lot of times. And I have to tell you, his interviews on his podcast, if you download his feed, you get the show every day. And like, he just interviewed Larry Sharp. But he has a podcast in there too that is really well done and interesting. But it is just too much. Like, and I don't blame people for just opting out completely. I don't want to vote. I don't want to pay attention. Everybody's full of shit. I don't want
to. That's where I've come to the last couple of days. It's just like, for this topic, I'm just like, I'm done.
It is. I called it my Waterloo. It's because it's so, people are so hell-bent. It is amazing how many times on this show that when we sit down and we do the research for the show and we put together the show notes and you read, you just go and read articles from five sites.
Yeah.
The Washington Post, the New York Times, Vox on the left, National Review, and Reason. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Zero Hedge for the conspiracy end of it. But you read those and you just go, wow, okay, everything everybody is arguing is not the reality.
Right. And that's what I always, every time I see an article, even if it confirms my bias, I will go check the other side and what they're saying about this. And they'll go, oh, whoa, this point's wrong and this point this. And you go and look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, they are kind of fudging the thing here. And it's not right. And it's not as what they thought it was. So, and it's not as, you know, polarized as everybody wants every issue to be.
Yeah. I thought Sarah made a great point in episode 318. She's like, if I like a headline too much, then I need to research the article.
Yeah, if there's an article that's just so perfect for your side
to share,
chances are it's not real. It's not there's something wrong with what they've written.
But the other part of that, like, I shared an article from Ross Douthat. I think it's it looks like Douhat, but I've shared two New York Times articles this week. One was by Ross Douthat, a Catholic, who wrote this article that's in the show notes that's excellent. And it is basically talking, I talked about it in the last episode. It's sort of this is the reckoning of the feminist idea of sexuality. Like, this is, you know, they were bathing in it in the early 80s. And now this is the fruit of the poisonous tree. You know, and so it was a very conservative article and written from a Christian worldview. And I share it, and it's just, I don't read anything from the New York Times. Yep. They're terrible.
So horrible.
I share another article from Tim Keller, the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian in New York. He is, if you are a Christian, or even if you're not, but if you're a Christian and you've never read Tim Keller or listened to his sermons, you're missing out. He's considered Yoda. He's the wise man of the Christian world right now. And he wrote an article about why Christians really shouldn't all get that involved in politics, but they definitely shouldn't use it as a tool of division. And shared it on Facebook with some of the quotes. And one guy commented, I don't read anything that has New York in it. Guarantee that this person, if you
would
read,
agree with everything they said,
every single statement.
I did that with Brian before he left self-deported himself. He it was a video of these people basically mocking kind of that over the top liberal mindset and everything like that. And he says I'm a liberal and I want us to win, but I don't want any liberals to be alive when that happens because we all suck.
Right.
Right. And it was just a, why do we act this way and be stupid about this and be stupid about this and why are we doing that? It was a great little video, and he's refused to watch it because I posted it.
Right, because you're a socialist.
Yeah, because I'm a socialist. People obviously, the, yeah. this is. I watched the first couple minutes of it, and it's obviously you're trying to trick people into being Democrats instead of libertarians. I'm like,
the idea that I've never understood this. The idea that I somehow can trick you into believing in my full belief system. I may be able to trick you into believing one thing about mm-hmm. something, and maybe I can manipulate you on a single issue. But trying to manipulate or trick you into believing everything that I believe is so... You have to choose that life. Like, mm-hmm. you have to choose that thought. Like, you know, there was a guy who shared the Tim Keller article, and he's like, I've cooled on Tim Keller. And it's just because he didn't embrace Trump full-throatedly. And you're just like, you're choosing to... Like, this is a person who wrote an article from a biblical worldview who mm-hmm. is not... a liberal or even a conservative pastor. This is just somebody who is a moderate type, you know, very gospel-based pastor. But because he's not Franklin Graham on the TV every day saying how great Trump is, you've cooled on him.
Right.
Like, so your politics is now informing your religion, which is the exact opposite of being a Christian.
I'm getting accused of hating, you know, being part of the resistance and hating Trump. And I'm like, right. I spent a year and a half defending Trump against the accusations of him with Russian collusion and manipulation and all sorts of stuff. I'm like, that's all bull, right?
Right.
And I've been defending him on that. And then I get turned around because I disagree with him on these other issues. Oh, there, you just hate Trump. It's Trump derangement syndrome. I'm like, you're not even thinking, you know, about what you're saying. You're just regurgitating these points you've heard because you think they're going to be powerful. And they're not. They're not persuasive. They're not powerful. Everybody laughs at you when you do it. Stop it.
Yeah. So,
but back to Kavanaugh.
Back to Kavanaugh.
Well, one thing I want to say, if you want to sure. take a second, my opinion on this whole thing is that there's no way any of us can know for sure, one way or the other, whether this happened, whether this didn't happen, whether it happened and he doesn't remember it, whether it happened and it was somebody else, all of that. So, if you come to the opinion after all the information you've read that you think she's lying, fine. I have no problem with that. That's your opinion, free to have. If you come away thinking that he did do it and he's lying, there's evidence that could be used to make that argument too. But it's when you get into the, I believe this, and if you believe the other thing, you're evil, rotten, horrible, falling for the other side's manipulation, but my side's not manipulating at all.
Right.
The evil Democrats are doing this, or the evil Republicans are doing this. It's like... I friended Rob Kendall.
How'd that go?
Recently. I wish I had waited because immediately he's into the Democrats have to be defeated at all costs. We don't care. This doesn't matter. And some of the comments I've seen, it's just, how can you think that way? How can you go through life thinking that partisan, that you're dehumanizing your opponents? We're all people. Just trying to do what we think is best in life. And we come to different opinions and different views, and we can inform those and have conversations about them. But if you get to the point where you hate someone else just because of their political views, there's something wrong.
There's something seriously wrong with your soul. Like, yeah. There's something seriously wrong with your thinking. Like, it is.
Get help.
To me, it's human. It's human nature. Like, I think everybody sort of lives at a base human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are better at emotions, and some people are better at intelligence, and some people are better at physical skills, and some people are better at, you know, the various forms of life. They're better at their career, whatever. But at the end of the day, there's always just a baseline. You're living out your emotions and your urges. And there has to come a point where you kind of step back and say, okay, I'm going to control these urges. I'm going to control my thinking. You know, you can... I tell people all the time, like... It's natural to get jealous in a relationship. It's what you then do with those emotions that determine whether you're a good person or not. It's mm-hmm. You're not a bad person for being jealous.
Yeah, everybody has base emotions that they get right. that they need to learn how to react on.
Right.
You know, you can't pretend that those shouldn't exist. They're human. Yeah. Like,
you will never erase anger and joy and guilt and shame and fear. And you will never erase these emotions. You will have the emotions. But it's how do you, what do you do when you have those emotions? You know, if you are a jealous, if you're jealous in a relationship, for instance, do you then start passively aggressively making comments, or do you say nothing, or which is okay?
It's fine. Everything's fine.
Or, you know, or do you say nothing because you step back and you realize, like, you know, saying nothing can be a form of passive aggressiveness, or it can be a form of, I'm having some feelings right now and they're irrational and I need to just let it go and it's not worth bringing up.
Then there's the option of burying it for so long that when the smallest little thing happens, it all explodes.
Exactly right. And this is what most people do. They just sort of. And so the goal is, you have to determine your goals. Like, what I have found in my life is that I have to set the goal. I have to set the guidepost. And I know I'm going to mess up. I know I'm going to fail with these certain things. I know it's going to take practice. And so I have to be forgiving of myself as I kind of move towards that direction. Like, you know, as I said last, like, I think celibacy is probably the goal if you're not in a relationship. Maybe not even celibacy, but just not having one night stands, for instance. But you're going to mess up, or, you know, or you're going to say, my goal is to make no passive aggressive comments. First, let me understand what that means. Okay, well, it's this, this, and this. It's not hinting at things, like hinting. If you're hinting, instead of just saying, hey, I'm having some feelings right now and I want you to validate these or not, you know, or just being honest, you know. But having the jealousy isn't a problem. It's when you act on it, when you act angry, when you abuse people, when you lie about things, you manipulate other people. Those are the bad things. Like, and so I just think people are kind of, when they're online talking about politics, they just, something hits their brain, their fingers start moving, and they never stop and say, they never take that beat. And Lord knows I'm guilty of it on almost a daily basis. Stopping. Does this article have the correct date? Does this make sense? Or does this just validate my underlying beliefs? Because I want to support my beliefs, because if my beliefs are in question, then I'm in chaos, and I can't have chaos. I need to have certainty. I need to have stability. I need to have safety. You know. And so I think it's worth people kind of learning how their brain works and some of these underlying emotions that you have. Because once you do, and you start to control your thoughts instead of your thoughts and emotions controlling you, controlling your behavior, controlling your urges instead of your urges controlling you, then eventually you get to a point where your interpersonal life, your inner world, your physical life, your financial life, your career, everything's better. You know. So what I feel like everybody is doing is not enough people are trying. And I think it is an erosion of there is no doubt that if you live in a society where religion is prevalent, regardless of the religion, then there is more of an incentive to engage with that religion. And religion is usually based on personal growth and conduct. And, you know, maybe people will argue with that, but the sociological reason for religion is to, it's software to basically
to control humans.
It's basically software implanted in the mind for you to understand cultural norms in a quick way. And by moving into this postmodern world where none of those cultural norms, in fact, it's a virtue to have no cultural norms, and to, it's leading us to hedonism, which is not something we're enjoying very much.
No, it's supposed to be about human empathy. I mean, you're is a, so if you get in these arguments online, and I see this all the time, you get an argument online with somebody who you don't know, you're much more fiery and angry, and you're blah, 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 blah. But the minute you know the person that you're arguing with, your tone changes, right? So there's
especially if it's a financial or sexual incentive not to be an asshole in that moment.
Right. But I mean, if it's just like, oh, I know this person, you know, socially, I'm not going to say some of the things I might have said to somebody I don't know.
Right.
But that other person that you don't know is no better or worse than the person who you would temper yourself to say to. So why are you doing that?
Right. They're still human
and
beings.
I'm guilty of it too. So that's there. But there's a great line.
It's also from, like, if you wouldn't nuke your neighborhood, yeah, then why would you nuke someone else's neighborhood in a foreign country? Yeah. You know, it's human beings are human beings regardless of where they are.
Yeah, so I just think people need to start thinking about that. And I got yelled at for saying that I think everybody should have therapy. Not that, and they're like, well, I can't believe you think everybody's broken. And I'm like, I don't think everybody's broken. I think everybody could use therapy because, you know, if your car is not working right and you can't really figure, I mean, unless you really know how to fix that car, when you take it to a mechanic who knows how to fix it and he can fix it much quicker mm-hmm. for you. Well, it's the same with going to a therapist. A therapist knows, can identify and give you the tools to fix things, like make you realize you're acting this way because of this happened and you're not even aware of it. And then you come to that realization and go, oh, I am. That makes sense. But you would never have got there on your own. Somebody helped you get there because they understand how minds work.
Right.
So I think everybody talking to a therapist once in a while is just such a good idea. And I didn't used to think that back in the, you know, when I was 20 and 30.
People who think that they don't need therapy are the very people who need it the most.
Exactly.
It's that resistance. Anytime you have resistance to something that is beneficial to you, you need to pay attention to that. Like, I have resistance to going to the gym. Well, I'm fat, so I should go to the gym, but there's that resistance to go, and it's that unconscious mind trying to self-sabotage. You know, people who don't, who just like, oh, I don't need to go to the therapist, I'm not sick, no.
They're frauds.
It's, right, they're all, the, you know, I don't buy it, I'm sorry. Like, I look at it when I go, anytime you have a natural resistance to something, you know, then there's a problem. Read The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, mm-hmm. which talks about resistance, or Do the Work, another mm-hmm. one of his books. Like, it'll really help you kind of get through some of that. But yeah, I think that we're just kind of living in an environment where people are fulfilling their urges as opposed to thinking about how their urges will ultimately impact their long-term health and also the health of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And ignoring their social responsibility. I think as libertarians, we're all about individualism, but you do bear some responsibility for the world that you're living in. Like, you, if you lived in a perfectly anarcho-capitalist society, like, you still would have responsibilities for not doing certain things to other people and creating certain environments. And so it always goes back to personal conduct, and that's why I love this audience, is that this is a group of people who really do think through these things
mm-hmm.
and are trying to be better people and trying to build a better politics. And it's very frustrating watching this Kavanaugh stuff. And I think for me, it's the most frustrating to see people who want to care, but they're so stressed out and anxious by it. They're not on a side. They're not mm-hmm. left or right or in the tribe. They're like, right. I want to live in a better world. I want to get involved. I want to make a difference, but I don't want to get involved in this.
Yeah, this is ugly.
Right. I feel powerless to do anything, and I hate mm-hmm. watching people feel manipulated and powerless, and they know they're powerless and mm-hmm. feeling manipulated.
Right. It's so many people who aren't recognizing that they're manipulated. It frustrates me.
Right.
Right. I mean, there's a, like I was going to say, there's a line in a Harry Chapin song that really has always stuck with me. It's called What Made America Famous is the name of the song. And it's a great story about an event that happened in a fire, and people who used to kind of hate each other in the town, you know, the hippies lived here, and then the conservatives didn't like them. And, but anyway, they rescue the hippies from the fire, and he spends the night in the house of the person who he had previously put a swastika on their door, you know, because there was kind of hate between them, animosity between them. But he says, when you get that close, it's kind of hard to hate.
Right.
Right. So when you know the person, when you get to know people, it's really hard to hate them. It's much easier to hate the nameless person on the other end, or the Democrats, or this group of people, because you're not seeing them as human beings. You're not seeing them as people. You're seeing them as an abstract thought.
You're an avatar.
Right.
You're arguing an emoji.
So that's, I think, the worst part of all of this is that it puts people in this mind frame of dehumanizing their opponents so they can do and say anything. There was a comment that I saw in one of the Facebook threads, and about Ford, who the person said, I hope she gets karma and she gets raped for real. And I'm like, how can your mind go there?
How could you even say, like, even if you have that thought,
right?
I can excuse you having the thought. I can't excuse you making the conscious decision to share that thought with other
and
people.
And thinking that you're righteous to do so.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think my feeling on Ford, so we talked a little bit about Kavanaugh. Yeah. Some stuff has come out, and I want to read some of this stuff, because I don't think, and it's always a possibility, but I don't get the impression that Ford is a politically motivated actor. I don't get the sense that she's making this up because she wants to screw Kavanaugh. You know, maybe there's part of her that wants revenge. I think that would be a natural emotion if you feel that he was the one that attacked you.
Well, there could also have been at some point where something happened between them that she feels animosity towards
sure.
before, and she is going to use this.
Yeah, there's real motivation here, I think, towards right. Kavanaugh. So this is from Eric Erickson, who is a never Trump Republican who's coming around to Trump, but this is all verified information. Here's my take on Ford. I think she told some friends, and the friends are politically motivated people, and they have, and then they turned her over to their politically motivated friends in the Senate. And then those people didn't give an F what happened to this woman. So Grassley keeps saying, why aren't you turning over your polygraph or your therapy notes? Well, the reason Ford doesn't want to turn over her therapy notes is that ironically, she turned her therapy notes over to the Washington Post.
A summary of them. I don't think it was a full note.
No. It was those pages that
right.
were germane. Right. And so the Washington Post didn't publish those. But if she turns them over to the government, then she knows that they will be leaked.
FOIA.
Yeah, and so she knows that, and she's given them to the FBI, I believe, but she does not want to turn over to the Senate committee, specifically the Republicans, her therapy notes, because she doesn't want those personal details and information that aren't germane to any of this exposed to the public. You know, and it's consistent with how this has all been handled, how she doesn't want to be the lightning rod she's become. You know, and it is a sad commentary that the Democrats leaked her information, leaked her name, and put her front and center against her wishes, re-victimizing her. I mean, you want to talk about re-victimization, then look at either Eshoo or Feinstein's office to see who did this.
Yeah.
Somebody in the Democratic structure did this. And so I think that she is, in a lot of ways, a victim of ever saying something to the wrong friend. And that friend, I think, may be Monica McLean. And so this is from Erickson yesterday. Ford's beach friend worked for a loyal Chuck Schumer ally. It appears what we all expected was true. These are his words. There has been a greater level of coordination to taking Judge Kavanaugh to taking him out than the media reported. Grassley yesterday sent a new letter to Ford's attorneys that curiously asks for communications between Ford, Ramirez, and the Swetnick teams. Now, Ramirez is the woman who took six days to figure out her story. Swetnick is the woman who is working with Michael Avenatti, who claims the gang rapes. Which, honestly, Ms. Swetnick, if you went to multiple parties where there were gang rapes, why did you keep going to the parties?
Well, my
no
comment
offense,
on,
but I would stop
right.
at one.
My comment on that, though, is I think, and I was talking to, I think, Alicia Dern about this, there could be a case made where she back assigned that to it. Like, these were going on, but she didn't know it. And then when
right.
she found out, then she realized, oh, this has been going on this whole time.
I don't know if they're
going to try and make that case, but I think that's something to think. I'm not saying what she's saying happened or any of that stuff.
Did you read the sworn affidavit by the TV reporter who was 350 pounds and she hit on him and he thought she was a call girl? And he basically says, this woman is totally politically motivated. And so it's under the penalty of perjury. It was a sworn statement, I think, to the FBI. But again, in the show notes, it's linked in there. And the title's something like, you have to read this letter to believe it because it's so crazy. So on top of that, it turns out that Ford's beach friend is none other than Monica McLean. She just so happened to be the spokesperson for Preet Bharara, the former Obama U.S. attorney tossed out by Trump. He not only has turned aggressively partisan against Trump, but he was a top deputy and trusted aide to Chuck Schumer. Now, because of the FBI investigation, we know that Monica McLean texted Ford friend Leland Kaiser. Kaiser claims no memory of the event, and she said she went to the event with Leland Kaiser. Kaiser says that she had no memory of this, and that's the person that was repeatedly referred to by Kavanaugh as his main, the crux of it was that I didn't do it because Leland Kaiser doesn't remember it. And Kaiser, you know, Ford said, you know, she's got an illness, and so that's why she's not here today. Like, she has, like, a broken foot, not some mental illness or cancer that would rot her mind, as it was implied in there. Kaiser claims no memory of the event and also said she never knew Brett Kavanaugh. McLean's text pressure Kaiser into clarifying away her story. So to go there, we go to Fox News. I know, but the CNN somehow, New York Times not covering this angle of the story. That's why I don't mind having a conservative press, because you get multiple angles of things.
You can find out when the other side isn't being very honest.
Right.
I mean, you need them both sides.
So Kaiser originally said in a letter to the Judiciary Committee on September 23rd, she does not know Mr. Kavanaugh, and she has no recollection of ever being at a party or gathering where she was present. So this was the friend. Kaiser told the investigators that she was, as the journal notes, the Wall Street Journal, urged to clarify her statement by Monica McLean, a former FBI agent and a friend of Ford's, the paper reported, citing, who works for Preet Bharara, who is, you know, he has a podcast devoted to anti-Trumpism. It's a good podcast, but he's definitely got a side. So I think, educated guess here, this is somebody who, this Monica McLean is the person who hooked her up with Feinstein's office. They live in California. She's obviously somebody who's very well connected, a former FBI agent, deep state. I'm not saying, I don't think the deep state is real. I think it's just networks of people who are politically interested.
I think it's the swamp is the deep state, but
yeah, I think she is the person who is connecting Ford to the lawyers, for instance, who are high profile Democratic Party hacks. I mean, these are politically motivated people. And so I think she trusted McLean, and she shouldn't have, because now she's front and center and going through.
When
all
we talk about this thing too, is I think that's unfortunate that they're trying to use the word pressure. I think that's part of the problem, is that the conservative press is now saying pressured to do this.
Sure.
When really it looked like to me that she had given a statement saying, I don't recollect this ever happening.
Yeah.
Right. And it was being used by the conservative press to attack Ford and say, look, this person says this never happened. And she's like, if you're trying to say that you just don't remember it, but you don't, you know, it may or may not have happened. They're using this the wrong way. You might want to clarify it.
Yeah.
You know, if they were going to pressure her to do something, why wouldn't they pressure her to say, yeah, I remember that. I remember coming down crying and running out of the house, and I didn't know what happened.
Because it would be too far of a stretch, though.
Right. But I mean, this whole thing about her making all of this up is like, why wouldn't she have done such a much better job of it? It's not that hard.
Yeah, but
why would you have two people in the room instead of one? Why would you, you know, not say he did something much more egregious than what happened?
Right.
You know, those are the types of things that really kind of step out in my mind that make me believe that she feels something happened.
Yeah.
You know,
I lean towards, man, I go back and forth. I mean, there are some days where I'm just
that's the thing, is that
he did this, and then I go, yeah, but there's also like the cutesy voice, and like, I don't know. I'm very conflicted.
It's not that clear cut, and that's what really.
And that was Colin's.
Still frost me about
that was Colin's point. Is there's enough doubt here that it's you know, she's sincere but not credible, and I've heard people make that point, and I think that's probably not far off. Is that she is sincere in her testimony, but there's not enough credibility to the accusation.
Right.
There's no.
And the worst part is that all of this is done is ensured that we're not looking at him as we normally would have. 95% of his writings are not being viewed. You know, nobody's talking about these
you know, decisions he's written. None of that happened after all this came out. Like,
right.
The sensationalism of it, the sexual.
Nobody.
Nature,
I remember at one point.
I
remember saying on the show at one point, you know, remember when Kavanaugh was nominated a month ago and none of us, because we moved on to some other thing. Remember when we were talking about Alex Jones being deplatformed?
Oh, yeah.
I miss those days. You know, like. And so, you know, poor Alex Jones, he's probably sitting here going, shit. Now everybody's going to forgive
me. Yeah, nobody's standing up for me when I need him the most.
All right, so final thoughts, Reinhold.
Final thoughts is that I'm over this whole thing. He's going to get, he might by this time already be a Supreme Court justice. I don't know if the Democrats are going to try to take over control of the House and Senate in order to impeach him. I don't know how petty they're going to be about it.
One House Democrat already said, we're going to investigate him. Yeah. We're going to, I've heard people say, we're going to impeach him.
Well, they're wanting to do that for Thomas, too, because they're saying that there's a lot of proof that that Thomas didn't
really
do it.
Let's be real. They want to do it to Gorsuch because they feel that Donald Trump, you know, they've done it with, they want to do it to every single one of the conservatives on the court because they say Bush was not elected in 2000, and so therefore Roberts and Alito are not justified selections. They say Trump didn't win the popular vote, so therefore these two are not, you know, they didn't give Merrick Garland a hearing, so he's not, so Gorsuch isn't, you know. It's just it there comes a point where you just go, you know what, enough of you people, you're not going to be in charge because you're too idiotic,
right? And I wish I could say, you know, the Democrats are so bad, and they are about all of that stuff. And I've fought and argued and defended Bush, who I'm like, why am I defending Bush against this? You know,
right.
Don't stop making me defend people I don't right. like. Stop making me defend Trump. But then again, then you've got people on the right who are just so over the top, frustrating,
yeah,
and manipulative. And it's like, I don't like either one of them. Pox on both houses.
Yeah, but at the same time, and I agree with you. The Tea Party, when the Tea Party was raging, the resistance is just the left's Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
But senators didn't have to be escorted places. Like, Democratic senators didn't have to have 24-hour... Like, there's something more violent about these progressive movements that I think really eat at people's sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does a really... It does a disservice to the good, honest Democrats in the world who just believe in liberal policies. You know, and it sucks for them that they're attached to these people, but they probably ought to speak up and say, like, hey, yank their chain and say it's not appropriate for you to go and, you know, Antifa is not appropriate.
Well, and the other part is to go and say, you know, maybe there's a better way. You could look at the Libertarian Party. We agree with you on these. And most of the Democrats who you're talking about, the sane Democrats, are Democrats because they hate Republicans.
Yeah.
And they want people to be want people's rights to be defended, and otherwise, you know, they're libertarians.
I think a lot of millennials, you know? A lot of millennials are Democrats because they think they live under the idea that the government can help,
right?
And they want people to be okay, and then they also want people to be left alone because they want because of gay marriage,
right.
And so, but now we're at a point where it's clear that the more progressive wing of the liberals. Mm-hmm. Want to control every aspect of your life and how you think, even. Right. And it's not tenable. They'll get spanked.
Yeah, what I was saying is that we try to say, okay, come on over to this libertarian side, both Republicans and Democrats, because if you're getting tired of what's going on over there and everything they're doing and the factionalization and the manipulation, come to us, and then we've got people in our own party who are our own movement who are just as bad.
No, not just as bad, because those... Oh. No, here's the problem.
The American Guard?
I don't know what that is, but I'm, I think if you're in the libertarian echo chamber, there's, of course, jackasses like Joshua Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who just make life miserable for the libertarian movement, like Joshua Smith and Matt Caniel and... How is it? How do you say it?
Canoe.
And, you know, like arguing between the libertarian socialists and some of these, and it's, but those people have no power and they're irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know,
Lou Rockwell.
Lou Rockwell can be very divisive. I'm not going to go all the way in condemning Lou because of the Mises Institute, which is a gift to the libertarian movement. But
if you want to support people who think you should stone gay people.
Well, yeah, like, what is it, Gary...
North.
Gary North. Yeah, no, Rockwell has, I think, some issues with some of his ideology, but, I mean, in terms of what he's done for the libertarian movement and raising up, archiving this material and making it, available to people, I think that the Mises Institute combined with the Ron Paul campaign, just that information was there. Jeffrey Tucker also gets credit for being the brain behind that, which is hilarious because they all hate each other now.
Yeah, and they all think, everybody's blaming who wrote the newsletters. Right. And it's like, either Lou or it was Jeffrey Tucker.
But that's, but that's a great example of, like, libertarians do the same thing where Ron Paul wrote the newsletter, so therefore I'm not going to support him. Like, you're not going to support a guy who's done more to grow the libertarian movement in the last decade than anybody.
No, that's the thing, too, is you could say there's some bad things for Ron Paul, right? So he doesn't focus on certain areas. He's more focused on these things.
Right.
So those things end up getting, his friends or his acquaintances end up doing things that make him look bad because he's not concerned about that stuff.
Like, go if you're concerned about that stuff, then you go do it. And let him do the Fed stuff.
Right.
You know?
So I'm not going to say Ron Paul is a horrible person, but I think that there's flaws that should be pointed out.
And there's no harm in that. But I think my point is that the libertarian movement, yes, there are disagreements, as there would be with any movement. There's disagreements in We're Libertarians.
Oh,
Galt and Harry still haven't spoken in like a year and a half. But you also got
Cato, you've got Reason, and all the, Cato and Reason are out there doing this, and then you've got the Mises over here doing this, and they hate each other.
No, but you know what I've noticed in the last year? As things have gotten much, much worse, there is a sense of unity starting to grow. Mm-hmm. And so you have a Matt Welch going on a podcast with Tom Woods. You have people kind of coming together because things are so bad out there that in here with the family, it's like, maybe we should work our stuff out.
That's why I said something the other day. I said, libertarian, because somebody was complaining about all the fighting inside the libertarian movement. I'm like, we will fight tooth and nail because we love to argue. That's just a reality about libertarians.
Right.
We love to argue. We'll argue every minutia point we can possibly think of, and so we can create these little factionalizations over a 3% disagreement. But the minute someone outside comes in, it's family.
Yeah.
Leave us alone.
Yeah.
Right.
So other final thoughts?
I'm glad this is over, and I wish people would take the second to, now that it's over, now that the decision has been, this has happened, with Kavanaugh, take a minute, take a week, step back, think about what you're thinking in regards to the positions and the people who you say are the evil on the other side, and start to realize that they're just people just like you who are as emotional about this and as passionate about it as you are, and just understand that all the differences is that you might disagree on a topic or two, but they're still human beings. They still deserve respect. They still deserve to be treated as equals in life, and quit trying to dehumanize everybody.
All right, my final thoughts. Woo, that was a little loud. Sorry about that. My final thoughts. I'm glad it's over, too. I've said enough already. So I want to thank Jason Doolittle, Craig DaCosta, Christy Avery, and the Liberty Coalition, and the Keller Boys for their support of We Are Libertarians at the $100 a month subscription level. Thank you, guys. Very exciting time to be in the audience. We need your support. Please, if you like these episodes, share them, download them, rate and review us on iTunes, Google Store, wherever other reviews are made, wherever you listen probably has a review thingy, and support us on Patreon. And we will see you next week. Harry has a thing on Tuesday, so we'll be recording on Wednesday, but you'll hear from us on Monday, allegedly. So we'll see how this daily thing goes for a while. So let us know what you think. We always appreciate your feedback at editor We Are Libertarians. So with that, we say adieu, and we'll see you Monday.